Ready then?
I think so.
Oh. Mike, working?
Yeah, I think so.
With Lou?
Oh, it's probably fine. I'm getting lost then.
Can you hear me? Is it good?
Well,
thanks.
Not you guys over there.
Oh, okay.
It's the one on the back next to this guy over there.
Can you hear me at the back? Yeah, I can hear myself from the speaker.
Where should I sit better so that echo works effectively?
You don't have to sit. You can just go.
Eh?
You don't have to sit. You can just.
I'll be here.
No, I'm just kidding. Okay, so hello, my name is Petros, as most of you probably already know, I'm the TA for this course, and I'm here to talk to you about your first assignment, which is about effective propositional inference, and we're going to go through the assignment, each of the tasks, and discuss generally what they're about and what you're expected to do. And hopefully I'll give you some guidelines, some basic guidelines to help you through. And hopefully there's going to be a few minutes at the end for any questions you might have and you might want to ask. So we're talking about doing inference in propositional logic. And we've got this famous propositional tautology from Shakespeare, to be or not to be. We're basically talking about prepositions or simple symbols or names, and which are connected using various connectives like and, or, not, implies, and if and only if. So it's a simple logic. And the main notions that we'll be looking at is satisfiability and the model. So satisfiability is whether or not a particular formula in propositional logic can be true. So is it possible to assign particular values of true or false to these propositions to make this formula true, satisfied? And in this particular case, the formula says that man and alive or not alive, and it can be satisfied, for example, by Hamlet, who is a man. So man is true and alive is true, so the formula is true with these given values. So this formula is satisfiable, and this is the model that satisfies it. Okay? Here we've got an example of a formula that is not satisfiable. So alive, and alive implies happy, and not happy is not satisfiable. So if you're alive, and being alive means that you're also happy, but it also happens that you're not happy, then there's a conflict. This can't happen. And if you want it in more logical terms, or more variable in value terms, if we assign alive to be true, then this makes happy true, and happy and not happy cannot be true at the same time. Okay? So we don't have a model to satisfy this formula. This formula is not satisfiable. And this is so far so good. But what we want to do is we want to use what we call the CNF, or the conjunctive normal form. And what this is, it allows us to simplify things a bit, especially when we're talking about DPLL. And CNF is basically a conjunction of disjunctions. And how can you not confuse that? Because usually, is it a conjunction of disjunctions, or is it a disjunction of conjunctions? So it's CNF, it's conjunctive normal form, so it's a conjunction of disjunctions. And here we've got the implication, and we want to get rid of that. We only want to have conjunctions and disjunctions, ons, ands, and ors. And we convert this into not alive or happy. Okay. And now this formula is in conjunctive normal form, and it's still not satisfiable. So we've seen two examples of formulas, one of which was satisfiable and one which wasn't. And it was fairly straightforward for us to decide whether or not it's satisfiable and to come up with a model. However, in actual applications, in industrial applications, and out there, we've got a variety of problems that are called SAT problems, or propositional satisfiability problems. And these problems can actually be huge. They can involve hundreds of literals, hundreds of clauses, and hundreds of clauses like this one. So the question here is, can we decide whether or not these huge problems, these huge formulas, are satisfiable? And if they are, can we come up with a model that satisfies them? So these are the two main problems that we're dealing with when we're doing propositional inference. And the answers are given by the two algorithms that we have. So we have DPLL that allows us to decide whether a formula is satisfiable or not. And WalkSat that gives us the model if we can find one. So before going into the tasks for this assignment, which involve both DPLL and WalkSat, we're going to first go through the data types involved. So your assignment, if you don't already know that, is in Haskell. And what we need to do is we need to represent things that we have on paper in data types in Haskell. Okay? And we're going to see how this happens in the particular framework that we're working on. So the first thing we need to represent is the atom, or the preposition, or the atomic sentence, whatever you want to call it. Okay? The atom is basically just a name, P. And we represent this as a string in Haskell, the string that contains P. One step further, we've got the literal. Now, what is a literal? A literal is a preposition in either a positive form or a negative form. So it's either P or not P. And we represent this in Haskell using a pair, where the first part of the pair represents whether or not it's a positive or the negative literal. And the second part is the string that is basically the name of the preposition. So true comma P for P, and false comma P for not P. Simple as that. Taking it one step further, we have to describe the clause. What is the clause? The clause is basically a disjunction of literals. In this example, we've got P or Q or not R. And we represent this disjunction using a list. Now, it's a list of literals. Now, we discussed how we represent literals as a pairs. So it's basically a list of pairs. And we've got the literal true P, which represents P, true Q, which represents Q, and false R, which represents not R. So as long as we know that the list of literals represents a clause, then we are going to treat it as a disjunction. And we don't need to have some special representation for OR or anything like that. Okay? One step further, a formula. What is a formula? A formula is basically a conjunction of clauses. So in this case, we've got three clauses. They're connected with ends, so a conjunction of clauses, a conjunction of disjunctions. How do we represent this? As a list of clauses. And what is a clause? It's a list of literals. And what is a literal? It's a pair. So we've got lists of pairs. Confused yet? Anyway, so this big list, this outside list, consists of three elements. Each element corresponds to one of the clauses. So the first one is the list, true Q, true R, which corresponds to Q or R. Second one is true P, true Q, false R, corresponds to this one. And the third one is false Q, false R, which corresponds to this one. One list for each clause, and one list to unite them all and give us the formula. Okay, so lists of literals. The next notion that we need to describe is the model. And what did we say the model is? The model is a set of assignments to the variables that make, or try to make, a formula satisfied. So basically, an example of a model is a model where we assign P to be true, Q to be true, and R to be false. How do we represent this in Haskell? Again, as pairs. First part of the pair is the preposition or the atom involved. Second part is whether or not the value that we assigned is true or false. So it's actually the value that we assign to it. So a list of these assignments is our model. Now you have to be careful here, because you might get confused a little bit, because these two data types look alike. So we've got a list of pairs here and a list of pairs here, which really look alike. But what is the difference? So can anybody tell me what the first one is? A clause, somebody said, and that's good. And what is the second one? A model. So here's our clause, P or Q or not R, true P, true Q, false R. And here's our model, P equals true, Q equals true, and R equals false. So these two are two completely different things. This is a list of literals, this is a list of assignments. The next notion that we need to describe is the node. This is a data type in Haskell that is given to you. And this is perhaps the most complicated data type that you have to use. And it's actually the search node used in DPLL. So if you remember, DPLL does some searching. And when you have a search tree. And a search tree consists of search nodes. And each search node must have a specific information that we need to perform our search. And what kind of information? We need three things. First, we need the formula that we're investigating. Second, we have a list of unassigned propositions, atoms. And third, we have the model that we have built so far. Okay, so three things: formula, unassigned atoms, and the model so far. We represent this using quite a weird data type. Not so weird, after all, just maybe looks weird. So it's actually a double pair. So we've got this red pair that surrounds everything. The first part of the pair is this huge thing over here, which is nothing else than the formula. The formula, we said, is the lists of literals. That's that huge thing here. If you look at it carefully, it represents this formula. Then we have a second pair, the blue pair, as the second part of the red pair, which has two things in it. The first thing is the list of unassigned atoms, P, Q, and R. And the second thing is the model that we have so far. S is true and T is false. Now, if this is too complicated, I can show you what this looks like more generally. So we have the red pair. First part of the red pair is the formula. Second part is the blue pair. And the blue pair has the list of atoms and the model. Hope that this is clear enough. So if this is still confusing, we're going to see how this is being used in DPLL further on. So for the first part of your assignment, you have to work on WalkSat. And WalkSat is, most of the algorithm is already given to you. So that's a bonus. And all you have to do is fill in the few parts that are missing. The actual function that you can use to test WalkSat is the WalkSat function. And its arguments are these. The first argument is the formula that it's trying to find a model for. The second argument is, again, if you remember WorkSat, the way it works, it is starting with a random model, and it's flipping some of the values to try and reach a model that satisfies the formula. And the way it flips is using two strategies. The first one is a completely random strategy, just picks one and flips randomly. And the second strategy is to pick the proposition that if you flip the value, it's going to maximize the satisfied clauses. Now, if this is too confusing, I don't want to go into detail about how WorkSat is working. You can read about it in Russell and Norvig and in your the lecture that you had about it. But this floating point argument here represents the probability of using the random strategy. Okay? So if you assign a probability of 0.8, it's going to be a probability of 0.8 to use the random strategy and 0.2 to use the strategy of the maximum satisfied clauses. The third part is the max flip, so it's the maximum number of flips. Is it barely just an integer? And the third part is the one that's probably going to confuse you a little bit, but it shouldn't. So it's got the maybe monad. I don't know if you guys remember what that is. But again, I don't want to go into the details of it right now. So this is the result, and it's got this crazy IO monad at the front. Now, you don't really need to know or need to care about what this monad does or is, because when you try to run the algorithm, it's going to print out the result for you. So you don't really need to handle this returning value here. So just don't bother about it. Don't mind it. Just run the algorithm with these arguments, and it's going to print out the result for you. Okay? So you have to implement a few simple functions that complete the WorkSat algorithm that's given. Atoms clause, it takes a clause and returns the list of propositions, the list of atoms involved in that clause. The atoms function, that takes a formula and does the same thing, returns the list of atoms or propositions involved in that formula. The isLiteral function takes a literal and a clause and tests whether the literal can be found within the clause. And it returns true if it can or false if it can't. So if the literal is a literal that is in the clause, we return true. The fourth function is flip symbol, takes a model and a particular proposition and flips the value of the proposition in the model. So if the proposition has been assigned to be true in the model, we change it to be false. Or if it is assigned to be false, we change it to be true. Okay? Now these are the simple functions that you need to implement. There's a slightly more complicated function, the assign function. And this function propagates the effects of assigning a particular value to a variable in a formula. Well, that's complicated already. Okay, let's look at it one step at a time. So what we're doing is we're taking variables and assigning values to them, okay? And each time we assign values to a variable, things happen. And this function has to make these things happen. In particular, let's pretend we have this formula. Let's assume we have this formula. And let's assume that we set P to be true. So this argument here represents P to be true and the given formula. Okay? So if we assign this to be true, then if we have a look at this clause, we're going to have true or Q or R. Now, whatever values Q or R have, this clause is going to be true, because true or whatever is always true. So we might as well delete this clause, because this whole clause becomes true. Then we have true and something else. So we don't need to deal about this, because whether or not this is true depends on these clauses and not this one, because this one is already true. Okay? So if we assign P to be true and we find P inside a clause, we can completely delete this clause. And the same happens to this clause, because this P is in here as well. P or not Q is going to become true, so we can delete it. On the other hand, not P becomes false. And this has some interesting effect as well, because false or something else is only true if that something else is true. So what we do is we delete not P from here, because it won't make any difference. If we want this to be true, then one of these two things must be true, because not P is false. So basically, to sum it up, if P is true, this clause becomes true, we get rid of it. This clause becomes true, we get rid of it. This part becomes false, we get rid of it. And we end up with this part over here, which is Q or not R. That's what the assigned function must do. Let's take this assignment and this formula and return this thing here. The opposite happens if we assign P to be false. If we assign P to be false, then this becomes false, we get rid of it. This becomes false, we get rid of this, just the literal. And now not P becomes true, so the whole clause becomes true, we get rid of it. So what do we end up with? Q or R from here, not Q from here. That's what your assigned function must do. And as soon as you do this, as soon as you implement the simple functions that I talked to you about and the assigned function, you're done with WalkSat and you can use it and evaluate it and have fun with it. The second part of the assignment is about DPLL. Now, DPLL, we said, is a function, is a procedure that judges whether or not a formula is satisfiable or not. And it has two steps. It has a simplification step and a search step. And you have to implement both. The simplification step has three strategies that we use for simplification. First strategy is to remove tautologies. What are tautologies? Now, we had the example of the Shakespearean tautology, to be or not to be. So when we have in the same clause P and not P, then whatever value we assign to P, this is going to become true. So whatever happens, this is going to be true, and we can remove it. And that's what this function is expected to do. The second one is the pure literal deletion. And this is slightly more complicated now. This one is looking for pure literals. What is a pure literal? A pure literal is one that appears in all the clauses at the same form. So if we have not R in this particular case, we have not R here, and there is no, and R, the opposite, R, is nowhere to be found. Okay, so we only get the form of not R. Now, if you examine the rest of the literals, they are not pure. For example, P is not pure because we have not P here. Q is not pure because we have not Q here. S is not pure because we have not S here. But not R is pure because R is nowhere to be found in the formula. So if R is nowhere to be found in the formula, if we assign not R to be true, then nothing becomes false. We only benefit from this. So why don't we do it? Why don't we just assign R, not R, to be true, since it's pure? And what happens is the same thing that happened with the assign function. These clauses become true and get deleted. So the result is the remaining one clause. So we find pure literals that only appear in their particular form and not the opposite form, if you like. And we delete the respective the clauses that we find them in. That's it. Now, the third step of the simplification is the propagate units, the unit propagation. What that does is similarly to the pure literal deletion, it tries to find unit clauses. What are unit clauses? Unit clauses are simply clauses that only have one literal. So P here only has P in it. So in order for this to be true, P has to be true. If we assign P to be false, the whole formula is false, so it's no good. So if we find a unit clause, we assign the literal involved to be true. Now, if we assign P to be true, then we have the same effects of the assign function. What are the effects of the assign function? P here is true, so the whole clause becomes true, we can delete it. Not P becomes false, we can remove it. And what do we end up with? R or S and Q. Everything else is deleted. Now, the thing that you have to note about this particular method is that now the result has a new unit clause in it, Q. And this as well has to be true for the formula to be true. So why don't we assign Q to be true as well? Q is removed because it's true, and we end up with R or S. Okay, so you have to repeatedly apply the algorithm until there are no unit clauses left. OK? The third part of the assignment is the search part, the search part for DPLL. And in order to do search, you need basically two things, any kind of search. You need checking, and you need branching. So you need a way, if you remember from your algorithms in searching, you have this child expansion function, the function that expands the children. That's basically what update does. So update takes a node and returns the list of nodes that are the branches, the children of the active node. Remember that the node is the search node this in the tree. Just picture the tree with the search node, and the update function is building the children, the branches underneath. Okay? And in DPLL in particular, the branches consist of two nodes. There are two branches, basically. The first one is we pick a variable that we haven't assigned a value to yet, and we assign it to true and to false. And we create these two new nodes. And then we repeat the same process again, like simplification and search. OK? So let's take this example. We've got this particular formula. And these are the propositions that we have not assigned the value to yet. And this is the partial model that we have built so far. You remember the node that we talked about before? This is the one. Now what we need to do now, we have tried to apply simplification, and nothing works. There are no pure literals. There are no unit clauses. There are no tautologies. There's nothing else we can do. So now that there's nothing here, we have this list of unassigned atoms. We pick one of them, and we assign it to true and to false. Oh yeah, this is the list of unassigned. We pick one of these in this list and create this list. What is this list? Let's see. We picked P, so we delete P from the unassigned clauses, atoms, because we assigned the value to it, so it's no longer unassigned. And let's say we assign it to be true for the first node, and we assign it to be false for the second node. So we have to add this to the model. As soon as we add this and we make this assignment, remember the assign function and the effects it has? Here we go. P becomes true here, so this clause becomes true. We have to delete it. And not P becomes false, and we have to remove it. Similar thing, or the dual thing happens here. P is false, so we remove it from here. Not P is true, so we remove the entire clause. So update does three or four things. First, it splits the two nodes. And then for each node, it does three things. Let's put it that way. First, it removes one of the unassigned atoms. Second, it puts a value of true for one node and false for the other node in the model. And third, it propagates the effects of assigning this value to the variable. Now we have two branches, and our search function can go through these two branches to explore. And that's the next function that you have to build, the search function. These are the arguments involved in this search function. This is basically the DPLL implementation. And the first argument is a function. Now, it might look weird, but it's basically the update function. That's the first argument. You don't need to worry about it. It's just the update function. The second argument is the list of nodes. And this is the recursive argument. And you can look at it as it being the frontier. If you remember the frontier from your search algorithms, that's what it is. Here it is. And we have the Boolean value that is true or false, whether depending on what the DPLL result is, whether it was able to determine that the formula is satisfiable or not. And we also have this integer here, which corresponds to the number of calls to the update function. So we use this for evaluation. And what you have to do is, for each recursive call, add how many calls to update you did. Okay, so each time you call this function, you have to give the integer of how many calls you've done so far. And once the algorithm is done, you should return this number together with the result. Here's the list of what the search function is supposed to do. First, so you have the list of nodes. We start with the initial node of just the formula, and everything else is in an empty model. We apply simplification, remove tautologies, pure literal deletion, and propagate units, the things you implemented before. Then we use check formula to check the result of the simplification. If the check returns that the formula is true, then we're done. The formula is satisfiable, we're finished. If it returns that it is false, then the branch that we are in is not satisfiable. So we have to pick the next branch from this list of nodes, from the frontier. Now, if there aren't any more branches left, then we're done, because we proved that we found that all the branches are not satisfiable, so the initial formula is not satisfiable. Otherwise, if we still have more nodes here, then we take the first node, and if we can't say whether or not the formula is satisfiable or not, because simplification was not strong enough and we still have some clauses remaining, then we call the update function, create two new branches, and continue to explore. Okay? So these are the steps that your search function has to do. Fourth part of the assignment, a heuristic search. So back here, we said that update function takes one of these atoms and assigns true and false to it. Okay, but which atom does it take? Is it random, or how do we decide? So what is given to you is the choose atom function. And the choose-atom function chooses from, you give it a list of atoms, and it chooses one of them to perform the assignment. Which one does it choose? The head, the first. And hopefully you'll agree with me that this is a rather naive way of choosing an atom. And so the question is it possible to come up with a way, with a function, with a heuristic that makes our choice better? And you have to think about it. You can look over the internet, you can search, you can use your intuition, you can use anything you like, as long as you document what you use to come up with a heuristic that makes our choice better. Okay? And contrary to the famous teaching of Master Yoda, that do or do not, there is no try, contrary to that, we're going to award partial credit even if you make a decent effort towards a heuristic method. Okay? So the fifth part is the evaluation and your report. You're given 8 sample SAT problems that are fairly larger than the examples that we usually give. And there are basically 8 files included in the tarball for the assignment. And you've got 2 algorithms, WOXAT and DPLL. And what you have to do is evaluate and discuss these algorithms. So you're given a make file together in the assignment. And you can use, as soon as you finish your implementation for WOXAT, you can use the command make WOXAT. And this will create a WOXAT executable in your folder. And you can use this executable to run WOXAT with these 8 problems and test and see your results. And the suggestion is that you put max flips to be 600 and the probability to be 0, 0.5, and 1. Apart from those values, you're still strongly encouraged to use to try more and play around and fool around with the algorithm and see what it comes up with. But these are the least that you have to try. And for each of these values, for these 3 values, you should run the algorithm at least 5 times for each of these 8 problems. And record the worst number of flips. So whenever you run the WOXAT algorithm, it returns the number of flips that it performed. You should just record the worst case, the biggest number that you get. And discussion. And for DPLL, you can use make DPLL. As soon as you finish your implementation, you use make DPLL, and this creates a DPLL executable. And you can use DPLL, this executable, with these 8 problems. And you should record the number of calls to the update function. Okay, that integer that we're returning, this is being printed out by the DPLL executable. You should record it for each of the 8 problems. Now, as soon as you finish your heuristic as well, you can use make DPLL2 to create the DPLL2 executable, which runs your DPLL with the heuristic that you built. and you do the same. And then you compare the results that you get from DPLL with those including the heuristic. And then you also compare DPLL to OXAT. Okay? What are the differences? What are the similarities? There is a list of questions that are in the assignment sheet. You can go through them and make sure you reply to them depending on what your results were. One thing to point here, your discussion, your report, should not exceed 1.5 A4 pages of plain text. So if you print your report, it should not exceed more than a page and a half. It can be less, but not more. Help. How can you get help? The theory was discussed in lecture 3, so you can have a look at the slides from that lecture. And you can also read chapter 7 from Russell Norvig, which includes all the theory about DPLL, WOXAT, everything. There's a drop-in lab every Wednesday, 4 to 6, in Appleton Tower, South Lab. I'm going to be there. If you want to come and ask a question, I'll be more than happy to help as much as I can. There's also a mailing list of inf2d-students at inf.ed.ac.uk. Hopefully, you already have received a couple of emails that I've been sending. And you can use that to ask questions there as well, so everybody can participate and listen to the answer as well, and maybe you can help others that have the same question. Or if it's a question of a more particular, a more specific topic, you can send a personal email to me in this address, p.p@ed.ac.uk. And as far as Haskell is concerned, as far as I know, as far as you've told me, some of you, are pretty rusty with your Haskell, since it's more than a year that you last saw any Haskell code, or you wrote any Haskell code. So if you want to remember things that you have forgotten, there's this website that you can refer to and look up things that you might have forgotten. And there's also a Haskell refresher lecture next Tuesday here, normal lecture time and day. But I should note that, basically this is just a bonus that we managed to come up with, because there was basically an empty slot, and we decided to dedicate this slot with the agreement of Jacques towards helping you with some refreshing of your Haskell code. But you should note that this is fairly late. This is already 2 weeks into the assignment, and there's less than 2 weeks left until the deadline. So you should really have already started if you haven't already. And you shouldn't be waiting for this particular lecture. This is just to help with your refresh your Haskell skills, but you should try and start as early as possible. And a few final words, a few final guidelines. Don't forget to put your matriculation number at the top of the file. There's a special spot that says matriculation number here. Don't change the types or the functions that are already given. You can try and change them if you know what you're doing, but generally, you don't want to mess with those, because it's going to probably break your code. It's going to break the tests that I'm going to run on your code, and it's going to be very difficult to check your code. You should start early, so that's going to be an interesting thing. How many of you have already started with the assignment? Well, that's good. How many of you have finished the assignment? Yeah, apart from Jack. How many of you have just read the assignment but haven't really started yet? Okay, and how many of you didn't even know about the assignment until today? Don't be afraid, there's no judgment here, it's fair. don't look. You're scaring the students. No. Anyway, yes, if you haven't already started, and especially if you haven't read about the assignment yet, you should definitely start reading it. It's a fairly long assignment sheet as well. It's fairly detailed. We can just start as early as possible to avoid long nights in the labs and so on. You're encouraged to play around with values. And if you do play around with values and put different values than the ones that we suggest, like more max flips or less max flips or whatever, you should just write this down in your evaluation as well. I tried these extra values, and these are the results I came up with, and so on. Just play around, have fun with it. Comment your code, that's really important. Comment your functions. Describe in comments what your functions are doing, how they're working. Make sure that your code compiles. Now, how do you make sure of that? You just run the, you can run the make file, the make walkset, make dplr or make dpl2, depending on what you want to test. And make sure that there are no compile errors before you submit your assignment. Usually in Haskell, compile errors are rather easy to fix. The difficult ones to fix are the logical errors, the things that go wrong and you don't really know why. These are the difficult ones. These are okay. If you can't solve them, okay. But you should definitely try and solve the compile errors. This is usually they're quite easy. They're just syntactic errors. You should just be able to fix them. So please submit code that does compile. And finally, please no plagiarism. Now, don't get me wrong here. You're not only allowed to, but also encouraged to discuss your approaches, the different approaches, your results, and all this good stuff. Compare your results, you know, I've got better results than you do, and so on. But please don't try to copy the code, because it's really not helping you guys. It's not hurting anybody else but you, because you're not learning anything from it, as far as if there's a minimum thing you can get from it, then why shouldn't you? The first questions are considered rather easy. So you just go and try them. Even if you get partial credit, it's going to be good enough. Whereas if you copy anything, the only thing that's going to happen is you just lose credit. And why should you do that? There's no point. Deadline is Monday, 21st of February, 2011 at 2 o'clock. And good luck. We've got a few minutes left. So I went through it quite fast. So if you need to ask something, just now is the time. Yes. Well, you're free to adjust your algorithm if you want. Other questions? Oh, yeah.
In the comments.
Yeah, in the comments.
Okay. In the comments, in the report. Yeah. In the report. Just go for it as far as you can, and yeah.
If we play with the values, then we found out that both are going to satisfy to some problem at over 600.
Mm-hmm.
Like, should we record the value over 600, or should it wasn't satisfied?
Yes. Well, you have to, but you can record it if you want. But you just mentioned in the evaluation that, oh, I used a value over 600. But you should definitely try to use 600 as well. I mean, yeah, just say that you can just record it at the evaluation, at the report, and say that I used the value of, I don't know, 1,000, 2,000, whatever, max flips, and I got this value as a result. Okay? Just make sure it's better if you record both values, so there's a measure of, so record the 600 and then have the second value that you got for more max flips next to it. Okay? And you can discuss why you used more max flips and all that good stuff. Any other questions? You got everything? Everything is crystal clear? Yeah?
Do you have any hints on the heuristic part of DPL, like search, or where you can find anything useful?
Well, there is a variety of papers written on DPL and heuristics. You can have a look, search over Google or Google Scholar or the internet. I mean, I don't have any specific resources, but it's really up to you to find your way through. Or you can just use your intuition and come try to think. As long as you explain what you tried to do and how you came up with the idea. Was it the internet? Was it a particular source or whatever? Just write down where you came up with the idea. Okay. Good luck with your assignment. And for those of you who have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them at the lab tomorrow or and every Wednesday until the deadline.
So
thanks.
One last thing, right? Regarding the plagiarism, it's very important that you don't plagiarize. It's not just you get zero, but also not that basically it's about careers and all that. You should care about this, it's quite interesting because it could also give you some things about if you want to do an internship or anything like that this year or next year. Right? So at least it's going to be by the careers office. That's on Thursday. The next lecture for you to do is going to be on Friday. Thanks.
And don't put your code on Paste-in.
What's that?
I'll probably find it.
What's that?
Don't paste bin.
Like, if people keep using paste bin, if you Google the functions, you can keep finding people's coursework. So, yeah, just you'll probably find last year's actually.
It doesn't matter, last year was different.
Last year was CSP, so I don't really think it's going to help with DPL at all. Thank you.
This is the